On this week's episode of Circles Off, episode number 94, DeMarcus Ware, one of my favorite players of all time. We're recapping the NCAA tournament so far, including two bets that were highly talked about. Steve Fezzik loses a minus 4,500 favorite. Rob Pizzola, the pizza man, loses a minus 750 favorite. Were they good bets? Were they not good bets? We'll get into that discussion. All that and more. Circles Off starts now.
Come on, let's go!
Welcome to Circles Off, episode number 94 here on the Hammer Betting Network. Rob Pizzola joined by Johnny from BetStamp. How's it going?
What a week of March Madness.
Yes.
In the books, the old four-day weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. How was it, Rob?
Well, we're going to get into it. I'm always upfront and honest with the audience. Suffered a horrible loss in the first week of March Madness. We're going to talk about that on the show today. For those who tuned into the live episode last week where we were talking March Madness, you'll remember that I said I laid minus 750 on no number one seed to lose in the first round. And I was very worried during the Houston game, but ultimately it's the final game, Purdue, that loses that bet. With that said, I've actually had a very good tournament. It's kind of like weird and I hate saying stuff like that, but it's the truth.
One bet he gave out lost.
Yes.
Minus 750, seven unit bangers. Guy's down 38.5 units, but yet he had a good tournament. All right, guys.
It was a big loss. I mean, there's no doubt, I'm obviously not chasing clout, or I wouldn't post like this kind of stuff. There's no benefit of saying something like this, right? Because I've had two big bets that I've given out in the last 2 months that have been substantial favorites that lost. And I don't care.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah, don't you remember? Super Bowl.
Right.
No field goal to hit the upright. Minus 590. That was, in my opinion, an absurdly good bet. Better than the minus 750 on no number one seeds, which we'll talk about a little bit as well. But yeah, I mean, it's been a good tournament. I've had betting success. I've had a lot of bets. I have had a lot of volume. I posted a thread to Twitter with like all my first round plays, and those were just at the regulated books, which was like 52 over the course of the first 2 days. And on top of that, I had other offshore and PPH wagers. It's a lot of volume going on right now, and it's been fairly good. So
fair enough. Are we going to talk about the bet? We should bring on Fezzik, our buddy, as well.
So we're going to talk about both of these. I will remind everyone out there, once again, Circles Off, brought to you by Pinnacle. Pinnacle is the world's sharpest sportsbook, now available to bettors in Ontario. Find out what pro bettors have known for decades. Pinnacle is where the best bettors play. Not necessarily me, if you saw my Pinnacle account with the favorites. Must be 19 plus in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Not available in the U.S. So two talking points. Myself, my 750. I got skewered. Rightfully so, I would say. Maybe not. I don't like getting skewered by people who are just like, oh, I would never lay that price on anything. I hate that more than anything. There's an argument to be made of whether or not you think it was actually a positive expected value bet or not. And I think that that's fair. Like, there might be somebody who says, like, no, I just don't think that was a good wager. You need to have, like, just under 88% implied in order to win this bet, and you didn't have that. Fair enough, if that's the argument. If the argument is, oh, you should never lay big favorites, then we're going to have a problem. But I got skewered. Our boy Fezzik, I say our boy because we had him on the podcast within the last month. Steve Fezzik posted that he was trying to decide how much he should invest in
quote unquote invest
in Purdue minus 4,500 money line, 99% plus bet, good value. And he got roasted. Eventually had to defend himself in an ESPN chalk article.
Holy, 585K views on the tweet.
This is
a lot of guys roasting him on the quotes, I can probably assume.
There's nothing that people on Twitter love more than someone losing a bunch of money. Would you not agree with that?
Especially
someone that's polarizing. Let's put it that way. And yes. Fezzik is very polarizing.
Absolutely. You're 100% right.
And so I want to walk through my process on why I bet the bet that I did. And then you can tell me whether or not you think it was a good bet or not. And we can define what we think a good bet is.
Fair enough.
Okay, so minus 750. I mentioned this on the stream last week. BetStamp social media guy, very aggressive for those, some of the people that don't know, messages me out of the blue and says, "Hey, Rob, just wanted you to know that a certain PPH skin, Paperhead, illegal book, frankly, not for the better, but for whoever's running the book, called Buckeye, has this bet, minus 750. And I think that's a really good bet." Like, okay. So the first thing I did was I immediately went at the time and I took the best prices that were available in market at the time and I parlayed them to see what it would have paid, which was worse than this number. Then I went to a market-making book, Circa, who was offering this prop at minus 1100 on the no, plus I think it was 840 on the other side, midpoint price of like somewhere in the 950 to 1000 range, all right? Then, for those that don't know, I don't originate college basketball. I don't bet a lot of college basketball, but I work with people that do. And there's one person that we really respect that tends to send, that sends plays, but sporadically. Whether this is, I just have, you know, I don't have the greatest relationship with the person, but it's either he sends when he's looking for more liquidity, either, I guess, because he's lost accounts or maybe because it's bigger plays. So he sporadically sends us plays. And some of the times, I don't know why, but like he'll send plays for 3 or 4 days, then he'll disappear for like a week. I'm guessing we're not his number one partner. Let's just put it that way, right? Like he comes to us at the low end of the totem pole. But he's been sending us plays, college basketball plays, going on 3 or 4 years now with really high success. Both sides and totals mixes it up. Anyways, one of the people that I've worked with in terms of automation in the past has worked with this guy as well on backtesting his models and so on and so forth. So he sends me, I ask him, "Can you send me a sim of your bracket for this year so that I can have it?" And he sends me a sim of his bracket overall with the percentages. And I go and I plug in the numbers and he's substantially higher than market on the number one seeds. So he sends me 99.3% Purdue, 96.5% Houston. 99.3%
on Purdue.
Fezzik
is your guy.
96.5% Houston, 98% Kansas, 98.9% Alabama. That's if you multiply those, it's a probability of 92.9%. So that's significantly off market. So my first response to him is like, "Hey, I actually checked T-Rank, Bart Torvik's numbers, and they're much different. If you multiply Bart Torvik's numbers, you get 85.1%, right?" So I'm like, "Are you sure your things are right with these one seeds or whatever?" And we're just having a conversation back and forth. You know, I don't want to reveal too much, but basically he says, "I'm fairly confident in my numbers." I asked him if he could send me one of the back tests that he's had for the year, which he does. So he sends me a back test of the entire season, which is like over 10,000 games of college basketball. And his mean absolute error, so his error metrics on money lines, are better than the error metrics of the Pinnacle and Circa closing prices. Okay? This is I know it's one season, but it's a fairly large sample. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go with it. I'm just going to ride this. So most of the bets I made this year on March Madness were one, off-market prices, or two, bets based off of someone else's model that I'm personally just choosing to invest my money in because I'm using the investment term like
I'm tailing,
right? Like this is a person who's had success. He can prove to me via a back test that his model's had success. And whenever we've bet the stuff, it's had success. So I'm just going to ride it. Now, somebody might say those numbers are wrong. Feel free to disagree. And that's completely fine. For me, I was confident enough to do that. The bet ultimately loses. He gave FDU a 0.7% chance of winning. They won. That was the biggest of the one seeds in terms of his probability to win. It is what it is. I swallow it, I eat it, and I move on with life, because that's what betting is, right? Now, I get it. We're not all robots, right? And there's people who are on the complete opposite side of this, right? Spanky made some tweets about this, which obviously I respect the opinion, but it's like...
What did he tweet? I missed it.
He basically said that he doesn't like... There's too much risk of ruin.
Oh, sorry. In betting a minus 750 in general, he just doesn't care to do that.
Yes. And he responded to Fezzik as well about his tweet. But overall, he's basically of the opinion that I don't want to bet minus 750s because the risk of ruin is too high. And that's his prerogative. For me, I'm going to tell you this. And again, I'm not going to tweet out every single bet I ever make or every big favorite I ever make. I lose big favorites. I win big favorites. On pretty much a weekly basis, I bet golfers not to win the tournament. Okay? Some people would think that that's insane. Why are you going to lay 1 to 20 on this guy to win, not win the tournament? Because I think that there's a probabilistic edge there. Formula One race last weekend in Saudi Arabia, I laid minus 820 on Fernando Alonso not to win the race. I'm not victory lapping this or whatever. Yeah, he podiumed. He had... I would put it optimistically at a 5% chance to win that race. He didn't win. I can celebrate that win. I think probabilistically, right? And a lot of people, what'll happen is the outcome happens, Purdue wins, and they're like, ah, terrible bet. For me, it's like, well, I didn't say that they were not going to win. I think there was like 1% of the time where they would win. The market thought that there was going to be like a 2.5 to 3% of the time where they were going to win that game. And I think it just fell into that bucket and you get unlucky. It's no different than roulette, for example, right? Roulette, you know, when the whole argument of, I've been talking for a long time, I'll get your opinion on this in 1 second, but the whole argument of never lay these big favorites, right? The casino does this all the time.
Yeah, and roulette. If you get enough volume, it literally doesn't matter. If you get enough volume and the favorite is the edge, even if it's a minus 100,000 every time, if you have enough, like technically, think about what the bettor is playing on like a slot machine even.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
They have a chance to hit
it. Progressive. I get it. It's a little different. But even on, like on a roulette wheel, sorry, that makes more sense. You're betting, they're essentially laying minus 3,600, the houses, every time.
Exactly. And for me, it's just like, I would, let's say the European style table, right? You got your zero and your double zero. There's 37 spots.
So incorrect. It's absolutely not minus
or 38 spots, but whatever.
It does minus 38, 6 to 1.
Double zero roulette. They pay 35 to one. The house edge is 5.26%. That's a known edge, right? It's different than sports betting because on the roulette table, you know, like you actually know the numbers. In sports betting, it's not apples to apples. Because you're coming up with what you think.
Well, sports betting could be fixed. That's why.
Well, that's true. Some sports, you never know, right? But you know your house edge. In sports betting, you're estimating probabilities. But ultimately, like, it's not a deterrent for me. In hindsight, I mean, I like the bet. Like, I've won money off of this person's plays for the whole tournament so far. This includes losing a minus 750. So who am I to say that, he completely priced everything wrong? I've done fairly well with that pricing, but I just don't understand, like I never will understand the arbitrary cutoffs of like, never lay more than this, never lay more than that. And it's like, no, I mean, I just want to bet edges.
I'll share my opinion on both these bets. All right, so here's what I'd say.
And by the way, I'm not commenting on the Fezzik wager, right? I personally think...
You're saying your bet.
Well...
Commenting on your bet specifically.
This is weird, right? Because like minus 750 and minus 4,500 are very different things, right? Like an edge is an edge. Well, I get it.
Principle remains the same. Like if you're willing, it's like I would be willing to lay minus 4,500 on something. I would.
So would I, but I would almost need to know it's a certainty.
At minus 4,500? Oh, I've done worse than that.
Well, I so
I've lost worse than that, by the way, minus 4,500. But I've also won bigger than that.
Yep.
So here's what I'd say. Fezzik's, both Rob's and Fezzik's, in my opinion, bad bets. Both. Not based on the result. Obviously, that's easy to say after the fact. when Rob mentioned on the podcast, I quick calced it after last week. And I'll say this after, but we'll start with Fezzix. Okay, so minus 4,500. I'll explain why this is not a good bet. Very simple. You could get a better price in market at Market Making Books. I just opened up Betstamp. I went to Friday, March 17. I clicked on Purdue versus Fairly Dick. I'm looking at it right now. There are five books that close at a better price than this. If you're going to tell me that five books close at a better price, I'll tell you right now, it's not a good bet. If you're going to tell me that five recreational books close at a better price, we might have a shot. If you're going to tell me that Pinnacle closed at a, what would be our show sponsor Pinnacle closing at minus 3262. Fezzik laid 4,500 to win 100 times whatever multiple he bet.
Yep.
You could have laid 3262 to win 100. He didn't. He got a worse number. I would have played Fairly Dickinson at plus 4,500 all day long. I would not have bet minus 4,500. And in reverse, what I'd say is I actually would have played the opposite of this play all day long based on the fact that that line was available for high limits and it didn't get hit. So it's more efficient than Fezzik's number. That's a straight bet. It's very easy to determine. Rob's bet, I also wouldn't have played Rob's bet. I actually did have a bet on the opposite of Rob's, albeit at plus 1,000. So what that means is I actually had a bet for a smaller amount than Rob because I actually wasn't, you know, able to get a ton down on it.
Also, you're betting the underdog in that situation is always going to be way less money. Yeah.
But I would have bet more on it if I could have, but I did have a bet on plus 1,000 for a 16 seed to beat a 1 seed in the tournament. Ended up cashing. I had the fair price for it, where it's like around what would have been 680 to 690. Meaning, I probably would not have played.
You would have taken plus 7. Well, you wouldn't have played it, but you would have found value on plus 750.
I would rather have taken plus 750 than minus 750. However, I would not have taken plus 750 if that was offered to me. Meaning, if Rob and I were messaging in a chat and he's like, hey, I want to bet this at minus 750. You want to go on the other side, handshake, gentleman bet. I would have said, no good. I'm okay. Yeah. I'll pass.
It was more advantageous for me to play that into a book anyways.
Definitely. But what I mean, for obvious reasons.
They think some of these people that are collecting this week think that
this, like, guy's a loser.
Yeah. Let's add more credit to this account, please.
Point of the story being, I wouldn't have played the same price as Rob. I also wouldn't have played against his number. So, you know, I'm not saying Rob's was a bad bet. It's just something I wouldn't have played. Fezzix, I do think in this scenario was a bad bet. No slight against him, but I think it's very obvious given that Pinnacle closed at, again, minus 3262, that you shouldn't be laying minus 4,500 and you should probably look to taking plus 4,500 on FDU. With Rob's, I think one thing that people forget is you're still betting a parlay in that scenario. So right. what Rob's bet was like parlay of Alabama, Kansas, Purdue, and
Houston,
the four number one seeds. So this prop is probably not the most accurate indicator of what that market should be. The most accurate indicator is actually probably the money line odds, or potentially even the spread odds, because they're taking higher limits. So if you were able to take the average spread odds, convert that to a money line probability, reference that with the money line, and then find a way to parlay all four at a fair price, if you stripped out the juice and parlayed those, you're probably honestly getting like minus 500. If without the juice, obviously with the juice in, you're getting around what Rob got. So you could have achieved that same price by parlaying all four of the favorites. And if you were to go shop around book to book and mix and match sports books, not just taking just the Pinnacle price, you would have been able to achieve a slightly better number than that. And for those asking, like, well, you can't parlay across books, doesn't make sense. In this scenario, you can, because the games are all independent events. So let's say Rob wanted to bet.
There's no overlap on them either in terms of start times.
They may have honestly overlapped, but for simplicity, let's say they didn't. But essentially what you'd have to do is, let's say you wanted to bet $100 total on this. What you do is you bet $100 on the first game. You lay the money line price. It's going to pay back like $5. Then you bet $105 on the next game. Win that, you bet $110. Win that, $120, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. So you can, in theory, do that. If you're betting higher stakes, you can't, because obviously then the last bet, you'd have to figure out a way to get down a lot more money, which might not be feasible on the money line odds of a good price. So all in, what I would say is, like, if you're $100 better, you could have achieved a better price than this. If you're a $10,000 better, you could not have achieved a better price than this.
Yeah.
Make sense?
For what it's worth, I mean, even using the Pinnacle closing lines, it's pretty much right on the exact price that I played it. I mean, this is where we probably...
That would just be an even expected value bet. Versus Pinnacle. Rob's going off numbers which he believes are sharper.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to get at. It's your fundamental principle. Like, I don't originate college basketball, right? I originate NHL. I originate NFL. I originate some smaller market stuff as well. And that's where I'm making my own numbers. I'm testing my own numbers. I have the utmost of confidence in my own numbers. If somebody plays back at me on one of those numbers, so meaning if I went and I placed a bet on a random NHL game, Buffalo Sabres, whatever, and someone plays back at me, line moves back to where it was before, usually what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to find out if there's any unknown info on that game that I have not captured, which is rare. But if there's not, I will just bet the same side again.
Fair enough.
I do that because I'm very confident in my own numbers.
Well, in theory, then you're shaping the market.
Yes.
And then, as I've mentioned multiple podcasts before, you're either going to win a lot of money or lose a lot of money. Thus will indicate how much you're willing to shape the market in the future.
Exactly.
Thus, closing in value, always efficient.
Right. Now, that's the NHL, the sport I'm the most confident in, right? And I see the public numbers that are available from other models that are out there and people who are betting these models for real money. And it's like, no, I know this is why they're getting this number and this is what they're doing wrong. College basketball, I'm flying blind. So as I mentioned last week, I want to sweat on college basketball. I want to sweat on March Madness, right? But I want to do it in a way where I think I actually have good bets. So for me, the easiest way to do that in the early going was, okay, on the first night, Selection Sunday, all the recreational books are open. Let's wait for Pinnacle and Circa and Chris to open, see what their numbers are, and I'll just pick off all these other quote-unquote bad prices at other books. That went fairly well for me.
I would say the other one went fairly dick for you.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Zach.
Yes. Fairly dick.
Oh, wow. The laugh track.
Laugh track. Did that just come to you on the spot?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Why?
It actually couldn't have worked out any better.
Hey, listen. I might get in the stand-up one day.
It couldn't have worked out any better. Anyways. We do a lot of educational content. I think one mistake, I mean, Fezzik got roasted way more than I did purely because of this tweet, right? Which is essentially advocating for other people to go and place that bet.
Yeah, that sucks, honestly. Rob tweeted his like midway through when Houston was like tied. And I feel like he just was like, by the way, I'm on this and I'm not feeling good about it. But yes, and this was at 11 p.m.
Oh, yeah,
you tweeted this at 11 p.m. When's the 16th? For Thursday night? Thursday night.
I don't know much.
Like a bandit going into Friday. You just needed a Purdue moneyline win.
I saw some guy on Houston like limping to the bench. It was a close game. I'm messaging around. I'm like, who's this guy? They're like, oh, he's Houston's best player. I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I made the mistake. The biggest mistake I made, in my opinion, was not the bet. It was tweeting about the bet.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like never, there. In hindsight, there is absolutely no upside to this.
Look at Fezzik's tweet. He had a zero, he says this, 99% plus bet.
Yeah.
He had a 99% plus chance of not winning on this tweet. I'll tell you why. If he wins this bet, yes. Nobody gives a fuck. They're like, oh, congrats. You're minus 4,500 won. If he loses his bet, 585K impressions, 212 quote tweets of guys absolutely ripping him. So pretty much, he wasn't a lose-lose. There's no, how is he going to win this? If he won this bet, it would be glanced over. This tweet would have barely any engagement. It would be whatever.
Yeah, I my biggest regret is not the bet. I overcame that bet already. Like, I'm pretty transparent guy. Like when I'm going through a rough patch or I'm having a bad month, like I'll let people know that was a shitty bet to lose. I sat there for a bit. And I'm like, damn, that sucks. Like I just gave away an entire day's worth of profit that I worked to get that day's worth of profit. You can't make that back on that day, whatever, you move on. It is what it is. The mistake was the tweet. And like I said, like I make bets like this all the time. I literally make bet on a big favorite weekly. Okay.
I don't tweet it. Max Homa, no tournament winner.
Yeah, not Max Homa, no.
He's been winning.
I know, like, I have bet golfers regularly to not win tournaments, period. I mentioned, like, people tweet, DM me all the time around F1 races, the hour leading up to the race. What did you bet on? What do you like? This and that. And I'm, like, gun shy to tell them, like, I think the best bet on the board is the field versus Fernando Alonso.
Lance Stroll, no podium.
I actually bet Lance Stroll against Fernando Alonso as well. He retired early in the race. But I caught a big bomb banger, a Logan Sargeant plus 333 against Alex Albon.
Nice.
His teammate who retired early in the race. But anyways, this is not about... I think probabilistically. And for people who are like, oh, sports betting's not a math problem. It isn't, like, but it is. That's not to say that watching the games can't help you or handicapping the game in some way where you're using your eyes to kind of determine, like, those can work. There's lots of ways to peel the potato. We say it all the time, right? There's lots of ways to do it, but inherently it is somewhat of a math problem, right? It's assigning a probability to an outcome and comparing that with what the market is offering you. That's essentially the name of the game.
If minus 4,500 Purdue, it would have been a good bet if that was the best number available in the market and the closing price was minus 6,000, I would have said, yeah, you know what? Tough loss. Lost his bet, but he made a good bet. The reason is not, has zero to do with the fact that it's actually a minus 4,500.
Agreed. So a lot of the people coming after me were just, you know, the arbitrary numbers people, right? Like, never lay over this price. I'd never lay over minus 200. And then you know what you do? You do a quick Twitter search of their username and Mayweather. And you find that like 3/4 of these people all bet Mayweather at higher prices. And this is like results-based analysis, right? Mayweather is a great bet because he won and everybody won their bet. But if you lose a big wager, then it's not. It's results-based analysis at its finest. Now, again, I have no problem if someone comes at me and says, you did not calculate this correctly. I don't think that the numbers you're using are correct. I would never have assigned a probability of, you know, 92%+ on this happening. I think it was closer to 85. And for that, like, that's a logical reason not to make the bet. There's also the reason, the spanky reason, right? Like, we are human beings. We're not robots. Some of us are robots or can be more robotic than others, right? But for somebody, losing a minus 750 favorite might send them off, like, and put them in a mental capacity where they can't function as a human anymore. Or like, they're so defeated from betting that they're now gun shy. Like, they don't want to pull the trigger on other games. And like, if that's going to be the case, then yeah, there's good reason for you not to make those types of bets. But that doesn't mean they don't come along regularly and are often very good wagers.
Yeah. Also, I see there was people like parading around wagers that had Fairleigh Dickinson moneyline. And then you look at the price, it's like they post a screenshot from FanDuel plus 1200. Like, that's such a bad bet that I know you won it, but to get only plus 1200, like, that's such a recreational style wager. And then, like, I would rather laid minus 4,500. I'd rather laid minus 5,500 than taking a plus 1,200 on Fairleigh Dickinson.
So, like, but that there is the mentality. I think me and you are the same in this. I mean, I'm pretty confident that we are. But good bets lose all the time, and bad bets win all the time. That happens regularly on a daily basis. There's going to be tons of bad bets that win.
For every good bet that loses, there's 100 bad bets that won.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, for me, it just comes down to I personally try to make good bets. More often than not, I try to beat the closing line unless I feel as though I am working off something that is more predictive than the closing line.
You're fair enough on that.
You want a good plug for BetStamp here, Johnny?
Go for it.
On Friday, I was doing something, and so I was just watching BetStamp. I was monitoring the lines all day, just like sitting in a chair.
You're getting a tattoo?
Yeah.
Well, let's see it. Is that your first tattoo?
From here, from my vantage point, I could not see him show the tattoo, and I thought he was making a masturbation gesture. He just lifted his arm up like this, and this is all I could see.
Said he was doing something.
I was like, what the hell is going on here? What is this show?
No, so I was just like, I had my laptop, I was just watching March Madness all day, and I was like scrolling through BetStamp, and all of a sudden I see the board start lighting up on Fairleigh Dickinson moving down.
Yeah.
And it was just shooting down from, it was at like 2,200 was like best price in market. And all of a sudden it was dropping rapidly. And so I went and grabbed quickly on one of the books, 2,100 I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
Plus 2,100. And the book I betted at closed plus 1,500. And like, obviously it ends up winning. I just had a small bet on it, but it was like, I was just watched BetStamp and BetStamp moved across. And
so, you bet it as a good bet at 2,100. Now imagine taking Fezzik's 4,500, betting at plus 4,500. How good of a bet that would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Disgusting. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, one more thing I think I wanted to bring up, but drawing a blank now, actually. I had one more good thing. Oh, it was this. It's a funny one. Obviously, we all saw Gonzaga TCU.
Yes.
That incredible last second, incredible slash devastating, depending which side you're on. Personally, had absolutely no side in the
same with me.
In the thing didn't impact me, but boy.
I had the plus 4.5.
Yeah, the plus 4.5. Good, good win. I wanted to say it's tough. I saw Brad Powers tweet that it was his worst gambling day of his entire life. But really, what I wanted to bring up was an absolute legend of the game. Someone I hope we can have on the podcast one day. That game unofficially put him into retirement. Alan Boston tweeted, it's over. He's done. He's not betting anymore. He's got to find something new. That guy on TCU with that flick bucket full court roll put a gambling legend into retirement.
The whole, it's not just the bucket though. Like, I, again, no side for me in Gonzaga TCU. Watch the end of the game live. And I'm very in tune with what the point spreads are, why people are watching the game. But like the fouling with that amount of time left on the clock is ridiculous in the first place, for one. But there's also no way he got that shot off in 0.7 seconds.
Like no, he did. He actually did.
There's no,
he got it off.
Think about how quick 0.7 seconds is to pick up the ball from that low. Because the ball was just bouncing. He let it dribble. Like, to that low, to get it up high, yeah, to release. Yeah, right,
actually. It wasn't. It's
like,
impossible.
They, point they four is like
shoot.
The tip.
You can do catch and shoot with 0.3.
Point four is the Derek Fisher back in the day, which was, you know, one of my greatest gambling wins of all time, as I'm just chasing all my losses. Derek Fisher turnaround jumper. But, like, that's one of the most absurd things. Just, like, insane. I feel for people, you know, you mentioned this when, I can't remember which bad beat it was, but like for every bad beat, there's someone who's on the other side of that. The shot that VSiN posted from their studio in the Circa in Las Vegas is perfect.
Half good, half crying.
Just guys with their heads in their hands, people jumping up. Like the reaction, I love sports betting.
That was like what you live for in sports betting, to get that win. But that's the thing. Like, it really is that. Whenever you get a really bad beat, I said this a couple weeks ago with the NHL All-Star game, referencing Knish lost one of the worst beats of all time, and I was on the other side. I got a lucky win. For every lucky win that you have, remember, when you're celebrating that lucky win, remember, someone else was literally on the other side of that and lost probably way more money than me on that bet. And then vice versa. Think about it. When you're losing money on a really bad beat, think of it. Someone was on the other end. Eventually, it's going to be me. Don't get too high off the wins, and then don't get too low off the losses.
Do you remember? I don't know if we've talked about our worst betting losses of all time.
I've mentioned a few, but yes, some of them do stick in my head a lot. It's honestly so frustrating. They're all player props, though.
Oh, so yours are prop.
No, I'll tell you. They're props because I'm so numb to what could happen on a prop that a game is never going to affect me. Like, that would never even be close to my worst loss because that's still a regular game.
I agree. I mean, for me, it's circumstantial, right? Because my worst loss is not the biggest monetary amount, but it's like what got me into the darkest place as a bettor. Like, when I was a casual bettor, early 20s, terrible at stuff, I bet an 18-point NFL teaser. Four-team 18-point teaser. I might have told this story before, but it's Buffalo Bills, Oakland Raiders. And I needed the Bills to cover some, like, a stupid number where it's like, people would laugh at what I took. Like, I teased them to, like, plus, I don't know, 24, something like that, right? Dumb. Like, really, really dumb shit that I'd never do now. But I'll never forget, and I've hated this guy my whole life, running back for the Oakland Raiders, Zach Crockett, came into the game in garbage time, and the Raiders could have just been kneeling on the ball, but they wanted to get Crockett to, like, a certain amount of yardage, and he was, like, he was ripping off these runs, and he was getting, like, super excited about it, and he was just, they basically just kept feeding him the ball for no reason. And he ran in a meaningless touchdown, like, absolutely no reason. And that was the absolute worst loss of my life because I was already down bad. And I was thought I was playing, like, this great teaser to get all my money back. Classic horrible.
For sure.
Yeah, you know. And then just like, all right, you know, they pick up a first down and me and my buddy are high-fiving. We're like, game over. They can kneel it out. And Zach Crockett's coming back into the huddle and he had, like, longer hair out of his helmet. It's shaking. He's, like, fired up. They want to feed him the ball.
But that's what I'm saying. That can't be the worst loss because that is just a regular game state. It's always possible for them to score.
Oh, of course. But, like, but it shouldn't actually be possible.
It shouldn't be, but, like it's still game. It's still the
There's
game.
There's, like, no still sense in them running plays.
Like, I mentioned when, like, Steph Curry shot the half-court shot. Like,
that was
not
in Toronto, All-Star
it
game.
It was, yes.
Yes.
That one was like, holy shit. Like, how the hell did that just happen? But at the same time, you're like, it was possible to happen. He could have shot. It's possible. There have been ones that are literally, like, not basically not possible. Yeah, I've had a pitcher under 7.5 Ks at 95 pitches come out for an inning at 95 pitches and get a 4-strikeout inning. 3 strikeouts and a strikeout wild pitch, throw to first and lose an under 7.5 Ks.
Yeah.
That's not possible. Like, that, it's barely possible to think that that could happen. I'm saying once you get losses like that, I'm never going to complain about, like, oh, are you kidding me? There was like a 20-point last 60 seconds and I lost an under in NBA. Like, I'm never going to complain about that because that's still possible as per the game.
Where do we stand on the replacement ref game? Seahawks and Packers? Because I lost that one.
See, that's but that was a physical game
but,
on the line.
But literally,
he picked it off. I know.
And they reviewed it.
But dude,
There's not a person in the world, like, even if you're a fan of that team, there's not a person in the world that could have saw that any differently than that replacement ref who just decided, like, nah, fuck it. We're going with this.
Dude, call. The amount of, like, player props you might lose because they gave, like, just an extra yard and a half spot. And you're like, no, that was it. And, like, you look at it, he was not a yard and a half forward, but it's like, that's the spot.
Do you bet NHL shot on goal props?
I don't too much, but don't. I know there's been some crazy stuff with the shots on goal. You just don't count them.
It depends, like, on the rink. At this point, there's actually an edge depending on who the home scorekeeper is.
Yeah, if you know it.
There are certain teams. All right, here, breaking news. Rob Pizzola giving away some of his edge. I won't give you the exact teams, but there's certain rinks in the NHL where they count shots on goal differently than others.
You got to figure it out.
Some arenas, if you dump it in from center ice and it hits the goalie's pads or he stops with his stick and puts it in the corner, counts as a shot on goal. In other arenas, it doesn't. And it's not consistent.
It's big not difference. Like an NHL, like,
you guys are literally saying, like, I'm not even numb to the fact of, like, if I have a guy, I've had players on, like, let's say, like, Donovan Mitchell under 3.5 turnovers.
Yeah.
And he's at 3 turnovers and then they get a double dribble out. And at the end of the game, he dribbles it out and it's a turnover, shot clock violation. He gets a turnover there. Like, that happens. It's going to happen in the game sometimes. Like, it's funny. But once you get, like, those types of losses, like, I'm not even numb to that one because I've had so many bad ones where it's like, I told you, my worst one was Kenyon Drake because they literally, the ref said, this play will be disregarded. It was a penalty. The game, it doesn't make sense. They ended the game anyways. He's never been done before. And they gave him the yards. Like, once you get that, I can never complain about actual points being scored in a game. If points were scored, it's not that bad a beat.
I agree. I mean, it's also the style of betting in the sense that, like, point spreads make things more painful.
Of course, because, like, if you win the game, there's nothing you could really... Even that Seattle one. Okay, fine. It was a bad call, but, like, the NFL team lost a game. That's still a big deal.
Yes. Because point spreads, when you're betting a spread and like you're watching another team come in, go into like backdoor the spread, you're not thinking rationally as the bettor, right? You're like, oh, why are they doing this? Why would they do that? This and that. And it's like, well, like these guys on the field that are playing, the vast majority, I'm convinced that some players are aware of what the spread is and they might like chuck up some shots late in game in basketball. But aside from that, I think the majority of these people don't know and they don't care. And they're just going on and like, they're playing because they're playing a sport. Like, okay, the game's over. The NFL game's over. But this quarterback wants to throw a touchdown in garbage time because he's, you know, playing for something. And people can't put themselves in that shoe. And they're like, oh, the game's over. Like, oh, they're risking injury. Like, why are they going to risk injury? It's like, well, no, it's the backup quarterback. He's like, they're trying to see what they have in him. Like, people start to think irrationally because of the point spread.
The amount of bad, yeah, no, I agree with you for sure. The amount of bad beats that have came on behalf of the spread, like backdoor covers and stuff like that, are ridiculous. But people don't even realize the amount of stuff that happens that just doesn't gain public appeal because it never actually like impacted the spread or whatnot. There's so many times where just like, what the hell? Like now that I look at games, I'm like, imagine that impacted the spread. I was watching Portland the other night. Dame Lillard, end of the game. They were probably down like maybe 15, 16, something like that. There's 17 seconds left in the game. Other team scores. Dame Lillard gets the inbound. Literally, he's like acting as if he's just going to dribble the ball. He's obviously going to dribble out. They're down 17 points. Like, have some respect.
Right.
Guy just at half court launches up a three. I'm like, from half court with 17 seconds left in the game. It missed. I'm like, holy shit. Like, imagine you had a live spread or something or that like impacted a total. I didn't even know what it would have impacted, but it's crazy stuff like that. Now I look at it from a fan and I'm like, wow, that actually like impacted the.
Oh, yeah.
That could have impacted the total of the spread.
Anything.
And with live betting now,
yeah.
Someone could have had, I don't know, Portland plus 17 and a half or plus 15 and a half, and they needed that bucket.
A kid did it in March Madness. He took a last second shot to cover the spread, and it was like a 23 and a half.
It might have been the NIT tournament or something.
Yeah, I remember
exactly what you're talking about because someone at Barstool, PFT commenter.
Did you see the guy who missed the dunk?
Oh.
The guy went for that dunk with like a disrespectful dunk and missed it.
Right? Yeah.
Imagine that was for the spread.
Yeah. You guys see when Purdue lost outright?
That would have been crazy. Yeah, imagine.
You see when Purdue lost outright?
Zach Edey.
I can't even get... This is the first time I've watched Purdue play all year. I've never been as close to vomiting in a game as I was there. Anyways, it is what it is. Next week... Very special episode. It's going to air Tuesday instead of our typical Thursday. Why is that? We have a very special guest. His name is Barry Horse. We will be breaking down the MLB season, which starts on Thursday next week. So programming note, if you're expecting a Thursday episode, you're not getting it. You're getting a Tuesday episode next week with Barry Horse. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Once again, if you like our comment, or if you like our content out here on Circles Off and the Hammer Betting Network, smash that like button. Subscribe to the Circles Off channel. Tell people you know about Circles Off. We'll be back next week with episode number 95. Peace out.